Let's just do it, okay?
Triple M's Big Breakfast
with Marto and Margo.
When you hear this music, you think of only one person.
The Rabbitohs?
The Rabbitohs team song, and it's John Sattler on the line. No, it's not. It's Anthony Albanese.
Oh.
What's he? Albo.
How you going? I wish I was as good a footy player as John Sattler was.
All right. Now, mate, the reason we ring you is because I see that journo a couple of weeks ago outed ScoMo as a pretend shark supporter, and this goes on in the world of politics, and we're worried. Like someone like Margo and myself, we're wonderful Broncos fans. Margo, could you name all the years of all six premierships of the Bronx?
Oh, geez. I know we definitely won one in 06,
yes.
2000,
yes.
97, 98, yes. And I think 92, 93, wasn't
correct.
It?
Correct. Albo, you see the sort of knowledge we're after?
That's pretty good.
Well,
are you testing the knowledge of our Anthony Albanese's commitment to the Rabbitohs?
Do you remember last time when you came on, we had you playing, was the quote from the Bible or Bennett? Albo passed the test. Nicely. So I have another quiz for you. Or did you? You didn't ring up for a political chat, did you? I hope.
Oh, always happy to talk the Bunnies, particularly in grand final week where we're in it.
Are you definitely a bona fide Bunny supporter?
I was a South Sydney board member, a director in the late 90s when we got kicked out of the comp and came back.
Did you march with George Piggins and Andrew Denton?
We helped organise the marches there.
Okay.
I was on the board at that time.
All right.
And I came out of the womb with a red eye and a green eye. I took my son in 2014 to the grand final, and my mum took me back in 1971.
Oh, do I need to be correcting? Have the South Sydney won more premierships than anyone else?
We have indeed, 21.
In what year did the Rabbitohs win their first premiership? That's question one.
1908.
Okay, one a little more modern question. Who won the Clive Churchill medal in 2014?
Sam Burgess.
Jesus.
Did he break his cheekbone on? Whose head?
James Graham.
Oh, my God.
Jesus, he's already answered how many.
In the first hitter.
Name the father's son. Well, you've already named the father. What was his son's name who played for Penrith in their grand final?
Scott Sattler.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, how about we make him go and name the son? What was the one that you gave up?
He took the winger burn out across the sideline in one of the great tackles of any grand final.
All right.
True fan.
Do you know
the
old show Mastermind? If you're on Mastermind, your category wouldn't be Labor Party politics. It would be
South.
Can I check? You wanted to name, I now have it in front of me, the 1971 winning Rabbitohs team. Could I possibly get you to name it?
The front row were Sattler, George Piggins, who replaced Elwin Walters, who was injured, and John O'Neill.
That's correct.
The second row is from McCarthy and Gary Stevens.
Oh, my God.
Ronnie Coote at lock. Bobby Grant, halfback.
Yes.
Dennis Pittard was the 5'8".
Yes.
The fullback, of course, was Eric Sims.
Yes.
The wingers, the centres were Paul Sait and Bob Honan.
Mm.
The wingers were, now this is a bit tricky because there were injuries and various things. Ray Brannigan.
Yes, you're right.
And,
I don't care. Keith Edwards, we know you're going to say.
Keith Edwards.
Who was at the helm of our political charter then in 1971? Do you remember? Was it Labor or Liberal?
Oh.
Who was the leader of?
Billy McMahon, the
big ears.
Very, very, very forgettable Prime Minister.
Yeah, the only thing you can remember about him would be his wife's dresses that she used to wear and hanging the boobs out. Anyway.
Before the great Gough came in 72.
Right. Hey, enjoy the grand final.
I can name the 2014 grand final.
Can someone turn his microphone down?
We can't hear you. Hey, you're the best. Thanks, mate.
Go the Bunnies.
Anthony Albanese, thank you.
Greatest political interview ever.
Ever.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers.
Triple M's Big Breakfast with Marto and Margo.
Marto, I'm not like you. I don't sit down at 6 o'clock at night and watch the news because I have four children, and that's impossible. So I get a lot of my news from social media.
I
follow Channel 7 and 9 and 10, and I see their updates that they put on Instagram. And I follow the Daily Telegraph because, you know, got to have my finger on the pulse, got to see what's happening in the news and the media when we're talking to the people of Brisbane.
Yeah.
And they posted something that I thought was really funny, not news related, but Watch House, police station reviews related. And they have found
by
customers?
What do you call people
they
who go to the watch out?
Done a, what is your favourite? These are New South Wales police stations and why? They've got some of the reviews off some of the police stations that they've found online.
Hold on. Do they do an exit survey as they let you out? They give you back your belt, your watch and your wallet and your keys. Would you mind taking a survey? Just see.
Yeah, can you just fill in this little form? Just
five
let us know
stars?
How we are.
Is it
out of
done
five
by,
stars?
Is it out of five stars?
It's out of five stars. You know, you and I, it's no secret, both of us have spent a little bit of time in the watch house once or twice.
Was it Brisbane watch house both times? One was for a fray, one was for a ding. A long time ago. Both of them, they taunted and humiliated me.
Yes.
And that's part of the... They don't want you to come back.
No.
They want to scare you into going. They don't want it to be too comfortable. Otherwise, you're like, oh, geez, I wouldn't mind going to the watch
back
house.
There again.
Great night's sleep.
Well, I actually got arrested for the same thing that Reece Walsh got arrested for, not the,
the drug use.
It was more the not
refusing to
not
move
moving on.
On.
Once I was told to move on, I just kind of wanted to ask some more questions, and I think they'd had enough of me.
Right.
They said, right, you're going to come with us. And I would have to say that my experience was
Gold
both
Coast?
Good and bad.
Gold Coast or Brizzy?
Brisbane magistrates, just here in Caxton Street, I got taken. I would have to say good and bad experience, Marto. The bad experience was that they clipped me with the handcuffs and I got a little cut and a bruise and I was bleeding.
Oh,
yeah, that hurt. However, when I took a bad photo, you know, they take your photo, I asked him if I could view it just to see if I looked good, and he let me retake it. I was like, no, I'm not happy with that. Can I do another one?
Jeez, that's amazing.
He said, I haven't had that request before.
No.
I said, well, there's a verse for everything. Anyway.
What are these people
saying?
Enough
about us. Yeah. These are some of the reviews of some of the police stations in New South Wales. We should tomorrow, 133353, give us your reviews
of
Queensland police
best
stations.
Watch houses
best
in
watch
Queensland.
Houses. We've done the best hot boxes.
Yes.
It's only fair that we do the best watch house. 10 out of 10. New South Wales police station said would get arrested here again.
Oh,
at Penrith Police Station.
That's encouraging repeat offence.
Yes, but then they got 3 stars out of 5 because they were very gentle when they handcuffed me. Their patrol vehicle was very roomy and new. Overall, very professional. We'll definitely get arrested by them again for sure.
Isn't that nice when you get slide into the back of a police car and you go, Newcastle, this is great.
What about the Riverstone Police Station? 5 out of 5 stars. Met many friends in here.
Oh, wow. So old school buddy.
Although it's a bit cold.
Same bikey gang.
And the food is a bit bland. But overall, it felt like a 3-star hotel. Next time I get arrested, I'll definitely make sure it's by the Riverstone Police.
Stop it right there. Did you get fed when you were in Watch House?
No.
You never fed me. How long was that bloke in there for? 3 weeks?
I asked for a phone call and they told me I watched too many movies to shut up and sit down. What about the Blacktown Police Station? 3 out of 5 stars. Spent the night in the lockup here.
Yeah.
The facilities were horrible. Only one choice of TV channel. Which played infomercials all night and fishing shows. I mean, who doesn't love a fishing show?
Something.
Would be nice to add some more options. Maybe invest in a Foxtel
a
subscription. I'm sure your customers would appreciate it. Riverstone Police Station, very popular.
Yeah.
Met an officer named Sergeant Jim who was very nice. Handcuffs aren't too tight and the back seat of the cruiser is very clean.
Oh, that's
10
nice.
Out of 10 would get arrested and fined $2,500 again.
Oh, roomy handcuffs is so important when you're on your way to the
Someone
station.
Wasn't happy with the Tookley Police Station. 1 star.
Oh, what did they do?
Don't do home deliveries.
Oh, gee, that's outrageous.
5 to 7 at the M's.
Triple M's Big Breakfast with Marto and Margo.
Get the Toyota forklift advantage. Visit toyotamaterialhandling.com.au, Marto.
Time to talk the greatest game of all because...
The grand final.
Countdown. 4.5 days. We all know that. And I tell you what, remember how Wayne Bennett on Saturday after his game, or Friday night after their game, he said, well... There's only one more game for me and one more game for Benji. Well, Benji ain't agreeing with that. Benji's never said to anyone it's his last game. He wasn't real happy yesterday.
36-year-old is now set to end his career an hour away from where it started in Sunday's grand final at Suncorp Stadium.
Everyone else is telling me I'm finishing except me, so I didn't know I was finishing.
He didn't know. Didn't realise.
Haven't announced my retirement, seems everybody else
has. Right. Actually, that was quite cute. He was down the boys from Keebra Park, where Benji, when he came over from New Zealand when he was 13, he went there and they gave him a haka. I think it was a farewell haka, and that's when he blew up and said, oh, woo!
Oi, hang on a sec.
I might have another one in me. And we're talking about that, and the team lists are out and all that. That's what happens on Wednesdays before the games, and you look down the list, and unfortunately, I think we've announced it already, but We won't need to pay credit to one of the great club men, a man who's been crueled by injury this week. The rug's been pulled from beneath him just before he's about to achieve his lifetime dream. If you missed it, Tevita Pengo Jr. has ruled himself out selflessly. Incredible. He is a part of the fabric of these Panthers, as Wally told us.
Pengo Jr. played just 5 games for the Panthers.
apart from that.
Apart from the season at the Broncos.
Exactly. There is one little uptick, and good on Pengo for Tevita for doing that and going, listen, I'm not going to stuff the team around. Because you know the guy who's going to replace him, he'll be wearing 16, jersey 16. His name's Spencer Linu. Okay, last year he was named in their team. Okay, the Panthers played the Storm last year and got beaten. Named in the team, got the flu in the week of the grand final, missed out. This year, his place in the team's been taken by Tevita Pengo, right?
Yeah.
Missed out again.
Opportunity.
So, opportunity knocks. You watch this guy. I don't even know what he looks like, so I'll find out Sunday. But I bet you he rips in. He's got 2 grand finals in him this weekend.
Triple M's Big Breakfast with Marto and Margo.
You know, for top odds on your sports and race betting, there is only one place to bet, and that is topsport.com.au. Please gamble responsibly.
Should we do that accident from Lockie from Joiner?
Yeah, accident outbound on the Centenary Motorway at the Middle Park exit. Left-hand lane is blocked, and the traffic, of course, is banking up, so be careful.
Talking sport, it's not all rugby league around here, you know. It's, folks, it's time to lift the leg.
The lid?
And explore the dark arts of sumo wrestling. We don't talk. I always say the leg. We don't talk. You know how they lift the leg up. Oh,
yeah. I thought you just mispronounced lift the lid.
No, it was lift the leg.
Yeah, you got it.
Now this is. Don't forget, this is a sport that's been going since the 16th century sumo, and I really don't think the Big Breakfast has spoken enough about sumo wrestling each morning.
I hate to make assumptions because I'm not really familiar with sumo, but is it predominantly in Asian countries like Japan?
Yes, yes, yes. Japan Tokyo. Going since 16th. Century. So
yes.
There's been
do
going
we do it here?
No, they have been here and done an exhibition at one stage. These are enormous, and they start at the age of 13 in these sumo academies and just eat and eat, and they got to grow the top bun. So they started the top bun, the top knot,
in
men's sport. They were the first.
They were the pioneers.
Have one. I don't know whether it's a handle or something to start throwing them around. They also made G-string for fat men popular. Of course, that's the other thing that sumo's really done for them. The reason I talk about it is because the greatest sumo wrestler of all time, a Yokozuna Hakuho, is retiring at the age of 36. His knees are
36.
Yeah, 36. His knees
average
are
player stuffed. Of a NRL player.
No, well, Benji's 36, and he's thinking, well, he hasn't said it for sure, but he's going to retire, and that's what happened. But this guy's not 78 kilograms or 85 kilograms.
How big is he?
He's 159 kilograms. He's 6'4", so he's one hell of a unit. You were saying the other day, you got to keep an eye on the calories to keep an eye on your weight. How many calories should you eat a day to maintain your weight?
Well, it differs for men and women, but to maintain or gain weight?
Oh, well, maintain.
I think the average male is about 2,500 calories a day.
Okay. Yokozuna Hakuho eats 10,000 calories a day.
Holy moly.
I don't know what's going to happen now.
Holy moly.
I know. He's won more tournaments. He's won more championships.
That is a lot of food.
That is a heap of food. His favourite meal is a broth that includes onion, green onion, ginger, mushrooms, eggs, white fish, salmon and beef.
That's really healthy.
Yeah, but can you imagine how big the bowl is? The bowl's about as big as this small MG car. Anyway, so we salute you, Hakuho.
Wow.
It's the first time we've ever mentioned sumo here. So what do you do in retirement after you finish retire? When you retire from sumo wrestling?
Eat less?
Oh, I hope so.
6 past 6. This is Triple M Morning.
Start wearing normal underpants.
I love the morning. The Big Breakfast with Marto and Margo. Triple M.
Oh, it's a real conundrum going on the Courier Mail front page. NRL Grand Final, 4 days to go, one stage, and then new cases have millions on edge. The key to lockdown, tough restrictions, la, la, la. And you have a look and you go, what? 4 little cases, Southeast mystery outbreak. We don't know what's going on. We need an expert. And where else do you go? To Dr. Paul Griffin, who's head of infectious disease at the Mater Hospital. Hi, Paul.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Right. At what stage? I know we speculated going, Anastasia Palaszczuk's got a new boyfriend. She'll want to take him to the footy and then she'll lock down. Is there something more technical that'll cause lockdown?
Look, I think it's perhaps a little bit more technical than that, yes. I mean, you know, we're in a fairly risky position right now given the number of exposure sites and some of the movements of at least one of these cases. But I think we'd need to see at least one, maybe a couple of transmission events, so new cases related or unrelated, to then put us into a lockdown. I mean, we've shown we can handle this number of cases many times in the recent past. So, you know, we're really on the edge at the moment.
Well, we saw just back in July that with six cases, we went into lockdown and they always say, oh, we've got to get the contact tracing.
Go hard, go early.
Why does it seem to be different for this?
I think part of it is we've learned a lot. We've obviously got our mask mandate in place, and our vaccination rates, while well below where they need to be, are certainly higher than they were back then. So I think all of those factors would be considered. But as I say, look, I think we're really close to a lockdown. If we saw one or a few cases from here, I think then that would force their hand, really.
Hey, but 52,500 people at Suncorp on Sunday night. Super spreader event potential. Why wouldn't we halve it and go, right, I'll let social distance every second seat? Why wouldn't they do that like they were doing in the initial stages? Because that shouldn't make a difference, should it?
Yeah, look, I'm sure all those things are being considered. I mean, if we say no more cases from here, I think it would, you know, clearly be a very safe event to be at, particularly with the addition of masks. And, of course, we'd ask people if they're unwell not to attend. And, you know, we need to have high rates of testing to make sure we do find cases this week. But, of course, if we see more cases, then all those options will be considered. And I understand there's a contingency even to move it to another location if they really need to.
Generally, the thing that they look for is community transmission. So, transmission within the community. We just had Brisbane's River Fire here with 70,000 people descending upon the South Bank parkland. And we haven't seemed to have seen any cases out of that. So it should be no different for the grand final.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, obviously it depends on what happens in the next few days. I mean, if we see quite a few cases pop up, then, you know, that risk might be considered too great to go ahead with that unchanged. But, you know, fingers crossed we don't see that many, maybe one or, you know, maybe no cases in there. And then we can be very confident that event is safe to go ahead as it stands.
Dr. Paul Griffin, can I ask, I saw some information that on the 24th of September when we had no local cases in the community or other sources, that Jeanette Young decided to declare the public health emergency for COVID to be extended to the 26th of December, Boxing Day. What does that mean for us as Queenslanders? I know they've been very strong on their statement about not being able to, travel interstate for Christmas, people not being able to see their families. What does it actually mean?
Oh, it just means, I guess, there's a little bit of increased capacity in terms of what the public health teams can do. And, you know, it makes sense because we're far from through all of this. And, in fact, the most challenging time may still be ahead of us when we do have to very appropriately start to relax some restrictions on travel. We will see case numbers climb. And what we need to do is make sure we still keep people safe even in that context. So, you know, I think it's going to get more challenging, if anything, from here. And that's why we need everyone vaccinated.
Hey, can I just check another angle that those rapid antigen tests, RAT. Now, from November 1st, we can all buy them and test ourselves at our own home. How will this all work? Because let's say I test myself and I test positive. Will I just
pretend that didn't
happen?
Yeah, look, that's exactly right. That's one of the risks. You know, these rapid tests are going to be a huge part of, you know, what we do moving forward, but they're not perfect and they certainly don't replace the laboratory-based testing that we've been really lucky to have, you know, such high-quality and rapid laboratory-based testing in this country. It's a big part of our success. These antigen tests, I guess, will help because you can easily do them at home more often. It's a bit of a crude screen, but basically, if people are positive, they still need to get it confirmed with a real test. And if you have symptoms, you need to be really cautious in believing a negative result, because the last thing we want to do is someone to have a false negative at home with one of those tests and go out and about in the community and spread the virus. So they're going to be really useful, but we do need people to understand they need to be used in the right context.
Paul, I know you're not a gambling man, but if you were, would you say the grand final is going to take place at Suncorp Stadium?
Well, I would think based on what we know right now, it's most likely that it will. Of course, if we see...
And who do you think will win the
cases,
game?
Look, I'm more of an AFL man myself. Okay. So,
I've seen you at the netball, Paul. I know you love the Firebirds.
Hey, mate, it's always great talking. Dr. Paul Griffin, Head of Infectious Diseases, helping us out again.
Triple M's Big Breakfast with Marto and Margo.
Margo, I know I'm the amateur economist on this show, and that's all I am, but I was reading again on the weekend, and you know, I love reading the papers going, oh, this might happen if that happens. China's biggest property developer, okay, they build all the houses. You know, they go, oh, China's property is going crazy over the last 20 years or so. Well, it's called Evergrande, and they've got $408 billion in debt.
Oh.
Okay, and it can no longer, it was told you got one day to service your debts, otherwise you're gone. And the Chinese government, if it happened here, our government would probably jump in. Over there, the Chinese government said, nah, we might let you sort this out on your own. This is a big moment, not just for China, but for us because of how we rely on them for iron ore. I'm not qualified to comment any further on this.
Okay. Martonomics.
Yes. Martonomics is not going to cover this. We're going to get someone proper. Scott Phillips from Motley Fool. Hello, mate.
Guys, good morning. How are you?
Well, I know I gave the brief. Is there any more you need to round this up for everyone?
Oh, you did a very, very good job. So let's just recap it a little bit. Evergrande, as you say, it is the most indebted company in the world.
Wow.
That $408 billion you talk about. I mean, it's a stupidly large number anyway. And as you say, right now, there's a stalemate between the company, the people it owes money to, and the Chinese government. And there's a bit of a Mexican standoff. If this goes badly, it can go very, very badly. If it doesn't, well, we'll find a way through.
Why do I care? What effect does this have for us here in Australia?
Right. Well, it's like the old line. You know the old line, if you owe the bank $100,000, you've got a problem. If you owe them $100 million, they've got a problem.
Mm.
And that's kind of where this comes from, right? So it's not Evergrande or even the Chinese government that matters. It's the rest of the world to whom that $400 billion, is owed.
Owed to.
There'll be a lot of banks, a lot of borrowers who are now out of pocket by that $400 billion. That could bring some of them down altogether. And it could potentially make people wonder, who do I trust? Who do I borrow from? Who do I lend to? And that could really gum up the financial works globally. So that's the why does it matter story. If there is a big credit freeze, rates could go up, debts could get called in, and it really could plunge us back into a recession of sorts, a financial recession, but still a recession. No one wants this to happen, right? It's a bit like during COVID when the banks went, well, I could foreclose on you guys because you're out of work, but if I do that, I mean, you're going to be a forced seller, property prices plunge, I wreck my own business by foreclosing on you, I'll give you some time to get out of this one.
Yep.
And so what's happening right now globally is all of these guys are getting around a virtual board table and saying, well, if we make these guys default, there's $400 billion of debt we've all got to try and make up somehow or cover. Or we can say, look, let's give them another couple of weeks. Let's give them a month. Let's try and sort this out.
Scott, but let's say it will get sorted out. Let's suppose that. But it'll mean that Evergrande won't be building as much, which therefore they won't be using as much of our steel, which they won't be using as much of our iron ore. And that's what's propping Australia up.
Nailed it. So that's the second order effect is what happens here. The Chinese government a few months ago, maybe 12 months ago, put some rules in place as to how much these guys can borrow. Now, about a third of China's GDP is construction. They are desperately trying to build their way into prosperity. The big watch out, the big unknown is China's government is a command economy. They are trying to create the economy they want. If they get to tell the people what to do, they're a one-state country. So they get to tell people what to do. If we get to a situation where they simply say, yep, this is all too hard, let's slow everything down, that's one thing. I have a feeling the Chinese government, look, they are an autocratic state, but they only exist unless the people revolt. And if you can keep the bread and circuses, food on the table, the economy growing, you're probably okay. So if I'm a betting man, I'm going to say the Chinese government find a way to solve this problem. They find a way to keep growth going because they know that's what keeps them sweet with the people and it's what keeps them in power. There are some circumstances under which the Chinese government could say, hey, we'll make people bring their money home to prop this up, and so they might force Chinese investors to sell Australian property or something like that, but it really shouldn't impact it. The Chinese economy is massive. The Evergrande is huge, of course, but even in the scale of the scope of the Chinese economy, it's reasonably small. So the credit impact could be big, but it shouldn't impact the Chinese investors or Chinese businesses doing business in Australia.
Oh, now we can all get some sleep. Scott Phillips from Motley Fool, thanks for making all us Triple M dummies a bit smarter.
Right, I'm a simple man. If I keep it simple, I'm doing all right. Thanks, guys. The Big Breakfast
with Marto and Margo. Margo, I think we're in the business of communication or something like that, aren't we?
Well, we talk for a living.
All right.
We communicate with people and each other.
I hung around with this really old mate of mine, as in not he's not old, same age as me, but he's
known each other for forever.
Known each other for forever, and he and his wife have got a boat, and they escaped Sydney a little while ago, and were up in North Queensland, and I spent some time. It's quite, it's like 18 metres long, but, you know, big, long boat.
Jesus.
All right. And I was quite fascinated by the whole thing because I'm a tinny type of guy and I'm a jet ski guy. And I said, mate, how do you, when you got to park it, how do you know, like parking a semi-trailer? You know, you go, right, well, I'm up here. How do I, and they've got cameras these days and sensors.
On the trailer, you mean?
Yeah, but they've got to back up their, you know, they're trying to park that at a marina, okay? Mm. You got to make sure, oh, you don't hit that. And there's other boats worth millions in these marinas.
Yeah.
He said, well, after we lost two phones, they'd have a phone at each end. Oh. Okay. Two of them went into the drink when his wife dropped both of them. And that's okay. There was no blame. Well, there was a fair bit of blame. They went, listen, to make sure we stayed together as a couple because it was close to divorce because there was yelling, there was swearing. It started with that. Then they went, hold on, let's use our phones. Lost two phones. And then they went to these walkie headphones, like we wear headphones, yeah, with the mouthpiece.
You know, like a wireless headphone walkie.
Like you see the singers and all that. Yep, they slipped them on and they talked gently and they said it saved our marriage.
Incredible.
Because we actually go, no, little left, right, left, instead of yelling out with swear words. And occasionally there'll be swear words, but they're really quiet now. They've learned how to communicate over distance. It's a brilliant thing.
Yeah, well, that's maybe what Corey and I need because we saw it at the caravan park because I just go, yeah, oh, left, right hand down,
backing the
jet ski trailer in
and the van
beside the annex and the tree that we were parked in between. And I'm like, you're going to take the number plate off. Go forward, right hand down, I said.
No.
So forever yelling at each other. But yeah. Not yesterday, the day before, we saw these two new vans pull in and both wives hopped out because normally when I get to the caravan park, I just leave Corey alone because I'm no help and he gets frustrated and we end up fighting. But I saw these two wives get out and they were directing their husbands back onto the slab and they had walkie-talkies.
Oh, they had walkie-talkies.
They had walkie-talkies.
Yeah,
it was hilarious because one of them's like, yep, left hand down, right hand down, talking into the walkie-talkie. And then he gets out to check and realises that she'd parked him on the wrong side of the slab.
Put the door of the van open. Oh, Jesus.
Opened out the wrong way. So we had to go out and then come back in.
Was there then yelling?
And then there was yelling because she was then frustrated and realised she'd done the wrong thing. So then she's yelling into the walkie-talkie. I'm like, you don't need to yell.
Hold on. Can we open it up? 133353. When you're communicating with your partner over a long distance, like has he got a shed 32 metres away? Is he downstairs always working with noise? How do you communicate?
My parents, we used to have an upstairs-downstairs intercom in
the
house.
We had one of those with a wire, no wireless. It'd be always, or one of them would always be flat.
Can you bring down when you're up there? How good. We should bring backwards an intercom.
The intercom.
Bring that. Or when you'd be talking onto your boyfriend late at night on the telephone, you know, the home phone, mum would get on the other
phone.
On the other phone and go, Margo, it's time to finish the phone call. I'm like, okay, mum.
All right. We want communication between couples or family, how you communicate over long distance. Well, because I know a lot of people probably say, oh, we do it by text.
Well, my daughter texts me from her Apple Watch in bed and her bedroom's like 10 metres away. I'm like, just walk down and ask me.
That's a thing. Is anyone else still doing this? 133353, communicating within your property, your family, you know, not over long distances,
how
maybe over 40
metres.
And it's the way you communicate. Or
I'm just a yeller. I'm like, yeah, that's it, right. Corey, can you bring that for me?
This is news to me.
We would never have suspected
when
you yell out.
Can you bring that with you?
It comes
maybe
as a surprise
like
to
a
all
little,
of us.
One of those little microphones, you know?
Yell. What, like, please help me. Not one of those microphones. You may only have so much noise left inside you, but you may have used it all soon.
Big lungs, Marto, big lungs.
Be careful.
Chase from Camp Hill.
About everyone else.
133353. Chase, how do you communicate?
Well, I sit out in the lounge room of a one-bedroom apartment, and my partner is about 5 metres away behind a closed door.
Yes.
So I text her and say, hey, doll, what's for dinner?
How does that go down?
Well, she usually goes, you're an idiot, and say, come in and, you know, talk to us in person, but... sometimes she might text back, say, yeah, we're just having chicken tonight for dinner or something like that.
Chase, I reckon there's 90% of the population, that's how they're communicating now within the house.
Well, text messages are free now, basically, between iPhones. You just iMessage everyone, whereas back in the day, you used to have to pay 75 cents a text.
You're a wonderful idiot, Chase. Thanks, mate. Oh, Pete from Salisbury.
Cheers, mate.
Yeah, cheers, mate. I didn't think he was still there. Can we? Pete from Salisbury has on the burner phone. We've got a fancy high-tech fridge. I've heard of these. That's got a digital whiteboard on it. I often come home to messages from my wife like, take out the bins, loser.
We we can just get Peter from Salisbury to text what brand that is, I might need to get one of those.
Oh, God.
We play the bin game where you just keep pushing it down until someone eventually
takes it all the way.
Miff from North Ipswich, good morning.
Yeah, morning. So it was actually my granddad and my uncle. They were repairing the roof on my grandparents' house.
Yeah.
And my uncle was up on the roof. My granddad was down on the ground. And we were inside and we could hear this yelling, you know, it's not 50, any idiot can tell it's shorter than that, rah, rah, rah.
Yeah.
And we went outside and we actually worked out that my uncle was talking in metric and my grandfather was talking in imperial.
Oh, no. No. So he was passing up cut sheets and the uncle was up him.
Yeah, up him going, great. What the, can't you measure shit? And my grandfather saying, of course I can, I taught you how to do this.
Well, I always get stuck on the measurements too, because you just said 18 metres when referring to a boat, but I always refer to boats in feet. So I don't know what 18 metres of a boat looks like, but if you said it was 30 foot, I'd in my head imagine and go, oh, yeah.
But they changed the metric, I don't know, 1970 or something or other.
Mm.
Who are you?
Like when you have a baby, you don't say kilos, you say how many pounds it was.
Because it's more.
It's just what people know.
It should be the circumference ahead, because that's the hard thing.
Daryl from Jimboomba, good morning.
Hey, hello, how are you?
Yeah, 1-3-3-5-3. You rang because you communicate a certain way. How do you do it?
Yeah, through Spotify. So I'm on my wife's Spotify. And
what?
Can you message on that?
No. You just change the song on the other person and it comes up.
All right, what's your favourite?
I thought you meant you're like sending her love songs through Spotify.
No, what's your music genre, Daryl?
Well, it depends on her mood, really. You know, it's my wife and... if she's angry at me, it'll be like Ash Nico. I don't know if you've heard that. Or, you know, she's got something nice to say to me. It'll be Fleetwood Mac or Blondie or something like that. And it'll be just certain parts of the song that she'll bring
one
up and it'll change on me.
One way or another, hey, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you.
What a great idea. Daryl, is it working? Is it a happy marriage we got?
It's great so far. We've only been married since December.
Oh, early days, Daryl. Get back to us when it breaks up, will you?
Still in the honeymoon phase and communicating via Spotify.
This
good
is
luck.
Triple M.
Triple M's Big Breakfast.
Weekday mornings from 5:30.
Amato, if I said Glastonbury, what would you think of?
Music festival in England.
That's correct.
A big one. Even I've heard of it.
Correct answer for this moment in time, because the Glastonbury, which is in Britain, the music festival site has come under the microscope.
No social distancing there. They probably didn't have it last year, but it's back on this year, was it?
I'm not sure, but high levels of illegal drugs have been found in the river running through Britain's Glastonbury musical festival site. The levels of cocaine and MDMA detected in the water were so high that experts said that they could be harming wildlife downstream, the White Lake River that runs through the festival grounds.
Jesus.
It's incredible. Mm. And I thought, you know, that's not really doing any damage to anyone, is it? Because it's just like the shedding, I would assume, you know, like COVID at Bathurst.
Yeah, it's in sewage
and stuff.
They
test the sewage and there's the shedding.
But what happens if a cow wanders down and has its drink out of the water?
He's in for a bloody good time, isn't he? That's what he's in for. Yeah. But they did say that the damagingly high levels of cocaine had risen to levels that interfere with the life cycles of the rare and protected fish and eels.
All right, now
that swim in
now
the water.
That's serious.
Yes, of course. And so I thought, because there's no witnesses or anybody that can sort of attest to what it is doing to our wildlife, I've decided to borrow your special audio grabbing microphones.
I know they've
been to many places like Heaven, Buckingham Palace, the NRL dressing sheds. I mean, you even managed to get them into Anastasia's bedroom that night that Peter Vallandy snuck
in. Right, very special night. Dwayne Bennett, I've been following him around lately. What do you mean? Did you grab them? I hit up the tech team and
I thought, let's send them over to Britain to the rivers of Glastonbury and find out what's happening down there.
Get you down, you know what you gotta do?
I know what you gotta do.
Just keep swimming.
Hi, that's pretty good on you, mate.
It's so pretty.
No complaints from over there, I hear. They're having a great time.
Sounds like the storm's mad Monday.
Triple M.
Wake up with the Big Breakfast. Weekday mornings from 5:30.
104.5 Triple M.
Just talking before about you're out, it made me think you're out at Lake Mulgrave.
Yes.
You're driving in each day. And you were saying, what were you saying about one of the towns? And I
said, we went to Kalbar.
Yeah, Kalbar. And I was trying to think, is it Kalbar? No, it's Walloon. Yeah, have you been? You haven't been through Walloon
no.
yet, have you? W-A,
well, might be two L's.
Double-O-N, yeah. There's the Walloon Saloon that always makes me laugh. Clever. I love it. Mm. And it reminds me, a mate of mine's an architect. He designed the Yeppoon Lagoon.
Oh, right.
I have something of a fascination for and it's mainly I don't think there's anywhere in town does silly things like this, but it's mainly regional areas who go, oh, I need a little bit of attention. I'll call my place, I'll rhyme my place with Walloon
Saloon.
Well,
it's stuff you don't forget, because when we were at Kalbar, we were passing through and there looked like a great little hotel, the Kalbar Hotel. So we stopped in, we had some lunch and a drink, and they had coasters that you could buy.
Mm, of
and
course.
And it said Kalbar with a heap of cow's bottoms on it. Been there, dung that.
Dung that.
Dung that, you know, cow dung.
Yeah. And that's what
and
they
it's clever,
do.
But it's memorable, you know, you don't forget that sort of stuff.
Now listen, and then the other day I was driving between Airlie, I went to Bowen. I hadn't been to Bowen for 40 years.
And they do the mangoes.
That's right. And I got a photo lifting the giant mango. Yeah, hilarious. And then I look and I go, oh my God, there's one of the greats. Another classic, clever landmark name, Bow and Arrow Hotel. Bow and Arrow. Nice play.
Well, you know how you were naming landmarks yesterday with NRL players? It could be the Bow and Jai Arrow.
Oh my God, that's Matt Bow and Jai Arrow. listen, as anyone, this could be the stupidest phone and no one will ring. And I'm not insulted by that. It's just that I've got three and I figured if I've got three, maybe
someone's got one.
They've driven to someplace and go, yeah, I can beat that. So the Bow and Arrow Hotel in Bowen, the Yeppoon Lagoon in Yeppoon, our central Queensland town, and the Walloon Saloon. And what a pub it is. Clever landmark names. That's where I'm going.
Can we help out with the Carton of Brick Lane draft?
I think we're going to need a bribe. Don't worry. No one's going to be ringing.
What's better the bribe than beer, Marto?
That's right.
Went to a bar in Nashville. Does that count?
What?
In Tennessee. It was called the Wild Horse Saloon Bar. No? Wild
You're
horses
not getting
in
a
Nashville.
Carton of beer for that,
no.
love. Let me tell you. Hold
well,
on. Who's this? Hold on. Can
you
we
said
talk
no
quickly
one
about
bring.
Tea towels now I get the chance? Why did our relatives collect tea towels?
I don't know.
You could never wipe up with them. They were just a point.
Well, the fabric was terrible.
Fabric.
Just horrible.
Had a print
and the print.
Anyway. What about you, Troy, from North Lakes, 133353?
Oh,
can you help
one.
Marto out? Have you seen a landmark or a pub or something that's rhymy and catchy?
No, my dad used to collect the spoons from all the small towns
and
places we used to go to.
My nana did too.
And he had a rack. He had a rack behind the bar and he had them on display of all the places that we'd be.
Yeah. What did he ever pull one out and use it for anything?
No. It was just a trinket of all the places that we'd been to.
We have evolved, though, because we went from teaspoons to tea towels and you couldn't really use either of those.
No.
Now it's all about the stubby cooler, you know, and you collect stubby coolers as you go and you can use those at least.
Troy, Dad's
the one town that sticks in my head, guys, is Sofala. Sofala stuck out the back of Bathurst there. It's a little gold town. Mm. Not much goes on.
No.
Just a pub and a three-legged cat.
Righto.
Why did you always remember that one, Troy? Sofala.
Three-legged cat. That's the thing.
Well,
all right, let
Troy finish.
No.
Apparently, I was standing on the veranda when they filmed The Cars That Ate Paris in Sofala.
Wow.
Oh, incredible.
I've got to get there someday.
Now move on from Troy.
Anyway,
Mark
we could talk teaspoons all day with Troy. Is that it?
Mark from Wellington Point. Good morning.
There's more people ringing.
Yeah, there you go.
Good, Mark. What have you seen?
Yeah, the loo with the view at the Lulabar.
Oh, of course.
Now, I've heard of this. I haven't been inside there. Tell me, is that what it's called, the loo with the view?
Yeah, it's right on the beach there, mate. Got the best view of the beach you can have.
When are you sitting down or standing up with the view? Are you standing up at the urinal looking at the...
I stand, mate.
All the time. No. Like a dog. All right. He's not getting a carton of beer, but he's a lovely fella. What's Nick from Ningi texted through?
You've missed the worst sporting stadium in Australia, Shark Park.
Oh, God. This is how low this phone segment is. Is there anyone else?
Robbie from Fernvale. Good morning.
Oh, Robbie. Save me,
Robbie.
Mate.
Morning.
Save me.
Morning, gang.
Yeah, save
good morning,
me.
Mate. What have you seen?
At Fernvale, which is on the Brisbane Valley Highway,
you know it.
We have a famous pie shop.
Okay, what's it called?
The pie shop
is on the Brisbane Valley Pieway.
It's not getting better.
It's not getting better at all.
Listen. That's great. I like that one.
Robbie, do you want some beer?
Oh, Christ. Let's
I
get...
would love some beer to give someone some beer. Pies.
Well, you don't deserve it, but we're going to give it to you anyway.
Brick Lane Draft. Thanks for the call. Triple M.
Yahoo!
Triple M's Big Breakfast.
Weekday mornings from 5:30.
Want $10,000? We'll see you about 7:30 this morning. Grand final tickets, 8:30. Bit to give away this morning. The Big Breakfast with Marto and Margo. This is Brisbane's Triple M.
Oh, Marto, where would I be without you? Well, I'll tell you where I'd be. I'd still be stuck downstairs on level 4 of the car park with a flat tyre because yesterday I left the studio here to head out back to Lake Moogra for our last day on
How
the
is
lake.
Moogra?
Yeah, good. I came back in there from this morning, but we're packing up today, which I've managed to get out of again. And Corey's bringing the van home today.
You've probably driven in the last 3 mornings further than any of our listeners to get to work.
Yeah,
good
about
on
an
you.
Hour and 20 nice. To get to work each day, but it's beautiful out there. Oh, God, and the drive's actually not too bad.
All right, tell everyone what
unless
happened.
You've got a flat tyre like I did yesterday. And I was down in the bottom level 4 basement and I come out and my car's like on a full lean-to because I'm like, oh, geez, that doesn't look right.
No.
Flat tyre. So I come back upstairs because there's no reception down there and I ring Marto. It's the first person I thought of. I thought I could ring RACQ or I could ring Marto. I'll ring Marto.
Marto,
are you
I
still here?
He
says, unfortunately, yes. What do you want?
Sometimes when you have your time again, you go, I wouldn't have taken that call. No, I just would have ignored it if I'd known what you were
said,
calling
I'm
her.
Still here. I said, well, I need your help. I've got a flat tyre. Would you mind helping me?
No,
or
no,
shall I ring RACQ? Yes. And you said,
I had
well,
a chance. I had
an opportunity to get out. And you said, oh, look, RACQ will probably be an hour or so. I'll come down and help you so, you know, you can get out of here a bit quicker. I was like, righto. So we get downstairs and we both kind of look at each other and go, have you ever changed a tyre on a Land Cruiser before? And I was like, no.
Me neither.
You neither. Okay, well, let's Google a video on YouTube. Oh, that's right. We have no reception down here.
We're in level 4 of the car park. That's below the Granby Long Way. There is no reception.
There's no reception.
Oh, there was that
there
tiny
was vague,
little bit.
It was vague 3G reception.
And it was a South African guy. He was from Durban or somewhere on the
he's
Google.
From Toyota Durban. It's the only video
Durban.
I could find.
Oh,
however, he was changing a rear tyre, not a front tyre.
Yeah, so anyway, that wasn't helping us.
So by the time we found all the tools, and there's about 10 bars you got to stick together to bloody, you know, find the hole to get the spare tyre down because the spare tyre on a Land Cruiser is up underneath the butt. It's not just lift up the flap like you used to and pull the old spare tyre
out.
You've
got to get under it.
On the Land Cruiser Ute, I know, you just go straight in and undo that. It lowers on the chain, but I could not find the bloody...
We couldn't find
where's
it.
Where's the hole? Some
well, it was
familiar
in under
story.
The
where's
gate,
the hole?
How
do I get in there?
I had to fold down the boot and it was in under the flap in under there. So anyway, we managed to find a point. That was the hardest part, wasn't it? We couldn't find the jack point under the front.
We worked really well together. There was no arguing. There's just with the big
if there was ever opportunity to go on the block together, you and I could.
Oh, no.
Anyway, we found the jack point. We got it up. We changed the tyre. We had about, I reckon, 6 or 7 people drive past that work here in the building, incoming and outgoing. Not one of them stopped to say, oh, you two right there, what are you doing? Except one who works for a rival radio station, and she pulled up and started videoing us. And she said, I'll send you the video.
It'll be on their radio show this morning, I'm sure.
Didn't offer to help.
The numbers.
But said,
M.
Oh, look at you, Marto. You're incredible.
I
had to offer was a pair of dirty hands from wheeling the tyre around. Marto's so kind. He's like, oh, no, Margo's been down here helping me. It's not just all me. Marto gets up looking like he's just run a marathon. He's red. He's sweaty. He's puffing. And there I am just going, oh, look, I've just broken a nail. You know? not a bead of sweat coming off my face.
And let's not forget, you are the daughter of a guy who owned a tyre shop,
big cam,
and you'd never change a tyre.
Never changed a tyre.
But you
I've
are bloody good.
Before.
You got into it though. You pumped that thing up, and then we realised we were pumping on the wrong point.
Wrong point.
And then
it's a bit dumb and dumber.
You were tremendous. I'll give you a rap on that.
But
you
I
had a bloody go.
I have to say thank you so very much for your help yesterday.
Last
because
time I'm ever answering.
It ended up taking us an hour and a half.
Yes,
I would have been better off calling RACQ.
An hour and a half.
This is Triple M.
We were sitting around the campfire the other night, and they had lots of questions about caravans because they're looking to trade in their camper trailer.
Oh, Oh, they had caravan envy.
They had caravan envy. They're looking to cash in on their camper van, camper trailer and look to join the caravan club.
Now, remember, that Austrac trailer's out there at Rocklea. Yeah. They went nuts last year during
Incredible.
So I don't know if they shouldn't have any worry selling a used one, I wouldn't think.
Well, not a used one, Marto, because the used ones are going gangbusters because this is happening.
We're in a recreational vehicle renaissance. With international borders closed, those who can are exploring our own country. But the booming demand is creating a caravan shortage.
Oh, Jesus, you should have seen them up North Queensland too, the nomads. Because the nomads, all the New South Wales and Victorian grey nomads have gone up there. They've got no intention of going home. They're everywhere. They're
it's a plague. It's
like
not just grey nomads, Marto. It's everybody because caravans are a family thing now too because holidays are expensive. It's expensive to stay in hotels. And then once you're in the hotel, you're just stuck there. Whereas in a caravan, it's like a home on wheels. You can take it wherever you want. You can pack up. You can pull up at the beach. There's free campsites, heaps of places. In Queensland, we're so very fortunate here. There's so many beautiful places. You can just pull up on the coastline or like us, go out west and pull up at a lake. You can throw some motorbikes in the back and go bush and do motorbike riding. Like it's so many. There's so many options. And
everybody's, I think I'm going to go and buy one now.
Everybody's doing it, Marto. You should do all it. The cool kids are doing it. But this is the only problem with that.
No longer just for grey nomads, families are the fastest growing recreational vehicle demographic, up 50% since the pandemic began.
She said everything you just said.
Just everything that I said, because this is what I really wanted you to know.
We haven't seen this sort of growth for decades.
Well, it's a golden era of caravans.
Yeah, basically. So a friend of ours, he bought a secondhand caravan that 6 years later he just recently sold to buy a new one, and he got more for the caravan 6 years later than he paid for it 6 years ago. So basically he's invested because we used to see cars and caravans and things like that being depreciating assets, but now people are making money on them.
Last 2 days I've seen three different articles, stories on telly and in the paper and stuff about cars, exactly what you say. Yeah. Land Cruisers selling for like 20,000 more than what this is used ones, than what they paid for them. Like my wife's just bought a Jimny.
That's the problem.
My wife's just bought a Jimny and then they tell me on the news she could sell it for $8,000 more than what she just bought it for. And you go, ooh, woo, 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 why don't we?
Friends of ours in Rockhampton bought a brand new Land Cruiser that they had on order for 8 months and they sold it for $20,000 more.
Because you're right. You used to say, why would you buy a new car as soon as you drive out of the lot?
You lose 20 grand.
You've heard that story?
Yeah, but now people are making money on their used vehicles.
Hold on, let's open it up. 133353. How much did you make either on your secondhand car or maybe you sold a brand newie or a caravan?
Boats are going gangbusters too, Marto.
Cycles. There's just not enough around because also the logistics problems getting them from overseas. People can't get cars. Tell us what you made. Have a boast about your success. Car, caravan, motorbike, boat.
Anything.
Victor from Warner. How are you, bro?
Yeah, good, Marto. How are you, mate?
What is this? A boat, a caravan, a car?
No, it was my son's first car. My middle boy.
Yeah.
He's 22 now, but he was 16, still going to school. And every day I'd come home from work and he'd have four or five cars off of Gumtree, Facebook, Dad, what do you think? What are you thinking? I'm, no, son.
Tell him they're dreaming, son.
No, that's it. I came home and he goes, Dad, what about this one? And I looked at it and I said, oh, we might need to have a look at this one. This could be a deal. And
oh, righto.
It was a Hilux, picked up for $3,000, and I thought, that's not a bad car for a first car for a kid.
Yeah.
He had it. We had to change the engine mount, did a few little things to it, but ripper of a car. I went to, took my wife away on our wedding anniversary, and he rings me and he goes, this is probably, I don't know, 3 months later, Marto, and he goes, Dad, I want to sell the car. And I said, mate, it's your car, you do what you like. I got a guy who'll give me $9,000 for her.
Wow.
I love that.
I laughed. I said, you're kidding. If he's prepared to give you $9,000, you take it and run.
200%. What's he driving? Yeah, he did. What's he driving now, Vic?
Patrol.
Oh, God, for a 22-year-old, not bad life,
incredible.
Is it? Incredible. I love it.
What about Mark from Gales? He understands what we're talking about. He bought a Nissan Navara, right, in 2014. So what's that now?
Seven years ago.
For $26,000. But after putting 80,000 kilometres on it, he just recently sold it for $31,000.
These are golden times.
It's incredible.
Holly from Petrie, you got a similar story.
Hey, guys, how you going?
Yeah, what do you got?
I've got a 1990 MX-5. I bought it last year. It's got top-up headlights and all.
Is that a Mazda?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Check this thing on the road.
Yeah. Oh, is it just? Right, yes.
Oh, yeah. Flew up to Cairns from Brisbane to buy it and drove it back for $6,000 and can sell it now for $16,000.
Wow, incredible. Will you sell it, Holly?
Not in this lifetime.
Not in this lifetime. You love it so much.
Sexiest vehicle on the road,
the MX-5. You love it so much, but you know you could sell it if you were really in a bind and you needed to make some cash. You got $16,000 in your back pocket. You got $10,000.
Yeah, if my mum was on a deathbed, maybe, but that's probably the only point.
You still wouldn't sell it?
No.
Well, you said only maybe.
Yeah, I hope mum's listening. That's virtually. I love you, mum. I think.
I mean, Holly hasn't made money on a second-hand car yet, but she knows she can if she wanted to.
Peter, we've been told you know this second-hand market quite well.
Morning, Marta. Yes. Being a used car dealer in Brisbane for the last 20-something years, that sort of is funny sort of market we find ourselves in now.
Will I make a declaration here, or do you want to? I got my Land Cruiser Ute through Pete.
Uh-huh. Mm. Peter, is this something that's just been highlighted by, you know, the current restrictions we face, you know, at the moment, or has this always been a bit of a thing? Have used vehicles, you know, ever been highlighted so heavily before?
No. See, what we had, the first stage of COVID, everyone sucked money out of their superannuation and thought, what'll I do with it? I'll buy a car.
Yeah.
So we had a wave of people coming through updating their vehicles.
Right, that was part one, yeah.
Part one. We had people buying light commercials when they lost their job, so they decided they'd start a little courier business or they'd buy a van and do that.
Really?
That was part of part one as well.
Hey.
And now you've got a combination of Holden not being in business anymore. People are snapping up classic Holden light commercials. If you go out and try and buy, say, a 15-year-old Commodore Ute, you'll struggle.
What?
Yep, you can't buy a VZ Commodore Ute there under 200,000 Ks anywhere.
They used to be everywhere.
Another thing that I've noticed is lots of big, like, Chevy trucks, big F trucks, big Dodge Rams getting around. Was that because the government gave us that instant tax write-off or whatever it was where they said if you spend all your money, we'll give you...
Possibly. I mean, the importers have brought those in to fill a gap because you can't buy
anything else,
a Falcon Ute or a Commodore Ute anymore. And if you need to tow a large caravan, you're not going to do it with a Hilux. You might do it with a Land Cruiser.
But the problem is now you sell your car, you've still got to buy into the same market for another car.
Correct. Well, I'll be out on the road today trying to buy stock, and if I come across a Commodore or a Falcon Ute that I can buy, it'll be a bonus day.
So are you finding shortages in at your car yard? You just don't have anything to sell? Is that part of the problem?
Correct. If we can get it, we can sell it.
Gee, so there's no problems for you.
And are people really paying overs, Peter, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
How much buying?
Probably 25%.
And do they know they're paying overs but they don't have any other choice because that's just what the market is stipulating?
That's what the market is. I mean, these days everyone is an expert because they've got car sales in their pocket. So they're looking and comparing what else is in the marketplace. And, you know, everyone's prices are pretty much the same.
I know. What's your best advice to someone about to buy a car, whether it's a cheapie or a
or selling?
Yeah. What would you say?
Do your research. Make sure you don't buy a repairable write-off because there's plenty of people in the marketplace exploiting aspect at the moment. So do your due diligence. Do a PPSR. Make sure there's no money owing on it. Make sure it's not a repairable write-off.
Or come and see someone like yourself, Peter.
Oh, sure.
Correct.
I'll give him a plug. Super Merc. Thanks, Pete.
No worries, bud.
It's the end of the podcast. What do you know? So tune in tomorrow and catch the show.
Triple M.